So they thought it would be a good idea to talk to him about it, but they asked if I would be at the meeting just in case. So I attended their next staff meeting, and I saw rather quickly what they were talking about, because almost as soon as an issue came up, the principal would say, "Oh, that reminds me of a time," and he would start to tell a story. And I was waiting for somebody to confront him on this in giraffe, but instead of that, there was a lot of nonverbal jackaling going on. People were going like this, rolling their eyes, poking the person next to them, yawning, looking at their watches, holding the watches up to the ear. And I watched this scenario going on for a while, and I said, "Excuse me, but isn't somebody going to say something?" Now there's a silence, and the man who spoke up in our first meeting, I could just see him getting his courage up, and he looks at the principal and says, "Ed, you have a big mouth." So let's see if whether what you wrote down answered the question I asked. Is it an observable behavior, or did you mix in any evaluation? And my two friends here will help us to make this evaluation. This animal has been taught to, somewhat like a police dog, to sniff out narcotics. If there's any jackal mixed in, he will howl. If you answered the question, this animal will dance. So, sir, what did you write down?
"My dad blames my wife."
Oh!
"For my choices."
He does what?
"My dad blames my wife for my choices."
Yes, blames is a judgment. See, that's already putting evaluation into it. "Dad, do you see yourself as blaming her?" "No, I see myself as calling attention to the facts." So see, Dad doesn't see that as blaming. "No, I'm educating." "Thank you, Dad." "Yes, okay." So how do we say it? See, we need a direct quote. We need to give it, to make it an observable behavior, we need to say, "My father says," what?
"All of his problems."
You are responsible for all of his problems.
Wait a minute.
He says this to the wife. "You are responsible for all of his problems."
That's it.
Yes, okay, that's a direct quote. That's what he says. That's giraffe language. You made a direct quote. Okay? See, as soon as you have the word blame in your consciousness, it's going to change the whole energy with which you approach the person, because you're basically making a judgment of them as blaming, which everybody knows is wrong. Yes?
I have the mic.
Oh, excuse me.
"Lately, my son is not doing his history homework."
Mm-hmm. Okay.
"My dad makes harsh judgments and insulting remarks."
Oh my God, you've killed my poor jackal. He could have handled the harsh, that was one judgment, but insulting, harsh and insulting, those are two judgments.
Actually, he does use insulting words.
No, there is no such thing. After today, in fact, seriously, by 4:30 this afternoon, you will never hear another insult. It won't exist. Insults will not exist. I'm going to show you to use some technology today that takes insults and criticism out of the waves, airwaves. So that no matter what your father says, you can never hear another harsh statement or another insult, because we're going to show you today how to use this technology. And with this technology, it will be impossible for you to hear criticism, harsh remarks, insults. With these ears, all you can hear is the only thing human beings are ever saying: please and thank you. See, that's all. We're going to show you today that all what used to sound like criticism, judgments, blame, are simply tragic, suicidal expressions of please.
"My brother..."
Yes.
"...yells at me to get in the car to go to school, and then he makes me late to school."
Who yells?
See, but you see, yells is a kind of a little bit of an evaluation. He speaks in a tone of voice.
Yeah.
Okay, it's the tone of voice. I was asked at Lincoln High School, is there Lincoln High School in San Francisco? Yeah. Many years ago, I was asked to work with the faculty there. They were having a lot of tension amongst the faculty, racially, ethnically. There was a lot of tensions, and the superintendent asked me to work there, and I started the day asking, tell me something that somebody else on the faculty does that you don't like. Man turns to the woman next to him and says, I don't like it when you yell in our faculty meetings. She says, who yells? Now, she was from a different culture than this man. See, what was yelling in her culture was quite different. And about 10 minutes later, when she started to yell at him by her own definition, I saw a difference, you know. So raises the voice when he's asking you to get ready for school. Yeah. Yes.
Or just kind of gets angry at me to get in the car.
Now, gets angry, that's maybe accurate, but it's a diagnosis. We don't know whether he's angry. He might be scared that, you know, you're going to miss school.
Yeah.
It might sound to you like angry. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But raises the voice, has smoke coming out of his ears. that you can see, you see. That's observable. Yes.
Fifth grader Jesse refuses to do his seat work.
Ow!
Refuses is a diagnosis. Maybe an accurate diagnosis, but it doesn't tell me what he does.
He just says, no, I don't want to do it.
Says, no, I don't want to do it. That's the behavior.
My husband doesn't tell me things which will affect me deeply.
The first jackal husband I've ever heard of. This is a new experience for me today.
A student in my class incessantly talks loud, won't stay seated, or keep his hands to himself.
I hear about three judgments in there. Let's go over it slowly because I hear three diagnoses. Say it again so we'll hear the three diagnoses.
Incessantly talks loud.
Loud is your interpretation. Louder than you would like. If you want to say it, put it that way. Louder than I would like.
Won't stay seated?
Won't is a diagnosis. Doesn't stay in his seat after I've told him to. He might in the future. We don't know whether he will or not. So that's a diagnosis. Doesn't at the moment. Doesn't when I ask him to stay in his seat.
And does not keep his hands to himself.
And does not keep his hands to himself. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Since coming to the introductory presentation on Tuesday night, I've been very aware of hearing evaluations.
Yes.
In myself and especially in other people. And so I started to wonder, you know, are all of those violent communications, or would there be a way that some of those are, according to this model, nonviolent?
I would say that any evaluation of others that implies wrongness is a tragic expression of an unmet need. Tragic in the sense, for two reasons. First, it decreases the likelihood that we will get what we want. Even if we don't say it out loud, even if we think it, if we are even thinking that what somebody else does is wrong, it decreases the likelihood that we will get what we want. And second, it increases the likelihood of violence. So what could be more tragic than that, than expressing ourselves in a way that gets in the way of our getting what we want and increases violence? So anything that we want to say that implies wrongness on the part of the other person, I'm suggesting, is a tragic, suicidal expression of an unmet need. Say the need. Learn a need consciousness, which is what we're going to get to now, you see. That's how we evaluate in nonviolent communication. We evaluate from the heart. We make judgments, but we make need-serving judgments. We judge whether what people are doing is meeting needs or not. We don't moralistically judge the person for what they did. We judge whether it's serving life or not, because needs are our direct connection with life. They're the life that's going... Needs are the life seeking expression within us. So we evaluate with reference to that. And that requires two kinds of literacy, feelings and needs. So let's be sure that we are all speaking the same language when I use the term feelings and needs. So under B, it says, imagine that you are talking directly to the person and express how you feel when the person acts in the way described above. And use this form. Again, we're talking to the other person. We're telling them now what they did. And we say, when you do this, I feel how? How do you feel when the person does what you wrote down under A? Write that down.
When you do this, I feel angry.
Okay. Anger is a feeling created by unnatural thinking. We'll get to that next.
When you're not ready to leave at the agreed time, I feel anxious and impatient.
When you speak that loud, I feel intimidated.
Oh! Intimidated is a diagnosis. Be careful of words that are more descriptions of other people, what you think they're doing to you, like intimidating you. So write down the following as not feeling words. Do not mistake these words as feelings. I feel misunderstood. I feel used. I feel manipulated. I feel judged. I feel criticized. I feel ignored. For example, aren't there times when you think somebody's ignoring you? Don't you feel relieved? And at other times, don't you feel angry? You see, so words like that really say very little about what's alive in you. They say much more about how you are interpreting the other person's behavior. And above all, never mistake the word rejected as a feeling. I feel rejected. No. That's not a feeling. That's a suicidal interpretation. Okay, who's got the mic? There's the mic.
Hurt, disappointed, disheartened.
Feel angry and betrayed.
Angry, yes. Oh, for betrayed. Betrayed is one of those words like intimidated, ignored, misinterpreted, used, manipulated. It's more a diagnosis of the other person than a feeling.
What about contracted?
Contracted? If you mean tense and like that, okay, if it's that.
When you call me up and speaking loudly tell me you are going to cut off funding, I feel angry and scared.
Mm-hmm. When you leave the dishes in the sink, I feel powerless over my environment and time, which feels frustrating and scary.
When you start talking loudly in the middle of my sentence, I feel hurt because I think you are not listening to me.
Yeah, the feeling is great, but you're going to lose it when you follow the word feel with the word because I think. Anytime you're thinking, your chance of getting what you need is greatly decreased. Especially when you follow the word think with the word you. Then I think you not only won't get heard, I predict a defensive, aggressive reaction. So it's going to be hard for people to care about your feelings when you follow that with a diagnosis that implies wrongness.
But
we'll get to that next, because we're going to see next that when after the feelings, there's two places we don't go, and one is up to our head. See, we stay in the heart with feelings. We don't go up to the head. We stay in the heart and connect with needs. But we'll get to that. Yep. If we want to use nonviolent communication, we want to be sure that we do not use the feeling in a violent way, because feelings can either connect us at the heart or they can contribute to more division and violence. So we certainly do not want to ever express our feelings in this way. I feel as I do because you. Okay? We never want to express our feelings this way. You make me feel. Now that will be a hard habit to get away from, because in a jackal culture, feelings are very instrumental to using guilt as a way of manipulating people. See, the way to manipulate people is if you can convince them that they make you feel as you do, then they should feel guilty and change, you see. So it's another form of this violent game. So, for example, if you are a parent and you want to use feelings in a violent way rather than a connecting way, you would express it this way. It really hurts me when you don't clean up your room. Okay? Or, you make me angry when you say that. I was talking during the break about one of my happiest days as a parent was when my oldest son went to a jackal school for the first time. He had gone 6 years to a giraffe school that I had helped create. But then I wanted him to learn how to enjoy jackals as well. So, and in giraffe schools, we also want to be aware that the children are not always going to be in this setting. So we want them to learn how to stay with their own values, regardless of which structure they're in, you see. So he comes back the first day from school, and he looked less than happy. And I said, how was the new school, Rick? And he said, it's okay, Dad, but whew, boy, some of those teachers. I said, what happened? He said, Dad, I wasn't even in the front door, really. I was halfway through the front door, and some man teacher comes running over and says, my, my, look at the little girl. Can you guess what the teacher was reacting to? Yeah, my son's hair was down to his shoulders. See, in a jackal school, as we all know, authority knows what's right. See, there's a right way to wear your hair as a boy and a wrong way. A right way to do everything, and who knows? The teacher. And then what do you do if somebody doesn't do it? You use shame, guilt, and so forth. You use the word girl as though it's an insult. Welcome to jackal land. So I'm getting burned up, ready to go do a little bat therapy with the teacher. forgetting all about my teachings. And I said to my son, how did you handle it? He said, I remember, Dad, that what you said, that when you're in that kind of environment, never give them the power to make you submit or rebel, you see. So one of the things we want to teach children very early, no matter what structure you're in, never lose track that you are free to choose what you do. Don't allow institutions to determine what you do. I said, hey, man, that you remembered that, that's a big gift. I really love that you could remember that under those conditions. Then what'd you do? I put on my giraffe ears, Dad, tried to hear what he was feeling and needing. I said, you remembered to do that? What did you hear? Pretty obvious, Dad. Looked irritated, wanted me to cut my hair. Hey, wow, man, I'm really glad you could remember that. How did that leave you feeling? He said, Dad, I felt sad for the man. He was bald and seemed to have a problem about hair. So we want children, the same thing we want to teach adults. Institutions can't make you do anything. Other people can't make you do anything. No human being has ever done anything they didn't choose to do. A Palestinian in the village of Hebron disagreed with me one time. He said, I don't agree with you, Marshal, that we only choose to do. Where was my choice 2 days ago? A soldier puts a gun at my head and says, take off your clothes or I'll shoot you. Where was my choice? I said, seems pretty obvious to me. You had a choice of whether to take off your clothes or not. He laughed. He said, okay, I got your point. I chose not to take off my clothes. That soldier knew I didn't have a gun. He was doing this to dishonor me. I chose to risk my life to protect my honor. Okay, so I'm not saying we always like the choices we have, but nobody can make us do anything we don't choose to do. So I said, apparently the soldier also chose not to shoot you, or else he was a very poor shot. My children taught me this about nobody does anything they don't choose to do. From the time they were 2 years old, they educated me that I couldn't make them do anything. All I could do is make them wish they had. And then they taught me another lesson, that any time I would do that, they would make me wish I hadn't made them wish they had. They taught me that violence creates violence. Okay, the next step then. We do not attribute responsibility for our feelings to the other person. We never say that you make me feel or I feel because you. Instead, we are conscious that the root of feelings are needs. See, behind every feeling, there is a need. Now, certain feelings tell us that there is an obstruction in our thinking, that instead of our being directly connected to our needs, we have chosen to go off to Jack-o'-land. See, so what are these feelings that tell us that we're not directly connected to our needs? Anger, depression, guilt, and shame. Those feelings are very valuable. They tell us that at this moment I'm not directly connected to my needs. Instead, we are up in our head telling ourselves moralistic judgments about somebody. Anger, we're making moralistic judgments about somebody else. Depression, guilt, and shame, we're playing that game on ourselves. But we're not alive, and as I would define being alive, which is connected to our needs. Yeah.
Do you make a distinction between needs and preferences or desires?
Yes, we make a big difference, as we'll see when we get to the next step now. Because needs contain no reference to specific ways of getting the needs met. Those are preferences. Or strategies, or requests. So we make a big difference between needs and between preferences, requests, strategies. So let's get into that. Let's right now connect our feelings with a need. Let's not go up to our head and think about the other person. Let's go into our heart and connect our feeling with our need, because needs give us the most power with people. See, giraffe is based on a power model, power with people. It increases our power with them in the sense that it increases people's willing giving to us, to enjoy giving to us. That's power with people. We have been trained in a power over model, the use of punishment and reward. That's power over people. To get them to do things not because it's coming from their heart and they want to contribute to our well-being or to life. No, they want to avoid punishment or get a reward. So we want to increase power with people. And the most powerful form of communication to do that is to bring people's attention to our needs that are not getting met. When people's full attention is on our needs, they hear no criticism, no demands. It is natural to enjoy giving. But if we hear any criticism or demand, we lose connection with that natural desire to give, and now we want to defend and attack. So, let's learn a language of needs. Under C, it says, imagine again that you are talking to the person and express your reasons for feeling as you do this way. When you do what I described, I feel as I'd expressed because I am needing or because I need. See. So now see if you can identify what need of yours is not getting met. Leave the word you out of here, because that will mix up need and preference. Leave the other person out of here. Just express the need without reference to the other person. All needs are universal. Every human being in the world has the same needs. So you can look at what you said and see whether this applies. You see. So what you wrote down is a true need. Every other human being in the world has that need. We're all created out of the same energy. So we really see this at the level of needs. All human beings have the same needs. What differs immensely is the strategies that we have been educated in for meeting the needs. Different cultures educate people to meet the needs in a different way, but the needs are the same. Who wants to check theirs out? Okay.
To know that you are responsible and honest.
That notice brought the other person in there. I have a need to know that you are responsible and honest. How do we express the need without bringing the other person in there? Now, we can bring it in one way. I have a need for your happiness, for your protection. We can say that.
Okay.
See, but not the way you're saying it. Yes?
I need to be seen and heard as who I truly am.
I have a need to be seen and heard as who I truly am. Okay?
Now, I have an impulse to qualify that and to say free.
To be?
Free.
I have a need to be...
The last word in that sentence is who I truly am, free.
I have a need to who I truly am to be free. Yes, that's a need we all have. The important thing will come out when we get to a request, because that's a request that only you can meet. Other people can't do that. They can't meet that need. So if you don't know how to meet it for yourself, for freedom, you won't have that need met.
I'm feeling a bit frustrated because I'm noticing that everything is a strategy. In other words, mine is a need for an aesthetic environment. But underneath that, there is a need for serenity. And my serenity doesn't come from the environment. So this entire request, starting at A, is a strategy to get something called serenity.
Okay, that's a need then. I have a need for certain peace. But isn't there a need in there for certain aesthetics that will...
Right, but it crumbles the house of cards for me of wanting the sink not filled with dirty dishes.
Help me understand that. Why wouldn't the... if you have a need for serenity...
But serenity doesn't come from a clean sink.
Okay, then we haven't got the right need then. Or the right, then it's not that you want the sink cleaned out.
But I'm projecting that need onto the sink, thus onto a behavior of someone else.
Well, the other person's behavior can be getting in the way of our need getting met. If the dishes aren't done, and it could be some needs of yours are not being met by that. Then you have to identify what the needs are that are not getting met.
I'm not sure. I'm really not sure that I'm not basing an assumption that by having that sink clean that I'm going to have serenity, and I think it's a false distinction.
Well, the nice thing about being clear about our request is we can test it out. If I say, for my need for serenity, I'd really be grateful if you would clean up the sink. The person does it, and I'm still not serene. Okay, that helps. I know that doesn't work. See, we never really know what we want until after we get it. If after we get it, it makes life more miserable, then we know that isn't what we wanted. If it makes life more wonderful, then we know that is what, you know, a strategy that will meet our need. That's what makes life fun. We never know what we want until after we get it. That's why Paul Tillich, the theologian, says that in Christianity requires the willingness to sin courageously. You ask for what you want, hoping to meet your needs. You get it, it makes life worse. Okay, now I've learned that isn't what I want. Wouldn't it be boring to know what is real? Yes?
When you do what I described, I feel as I expressed, because I need respect and acknowledgement, and I need to be able to feel safe in my job environment.
I hear needs in there. Yes?
When you do what I described, I feel as I express, because I need to express my desire and need without it hurting you.
No. Now we got a bunch of stuff.
Oh,
in there.
Shoot.
If you want to avoid hurting other people, the only way I can offer you to do that is to become a nice, dead person.
Yeah.
Because if other people have jackal ears, they can get hurt if you have heartburn.
So would I just cut off that second half? Just, I need to express my desire and need?
Yes, and then what you want to say to yourself, and I want to learn to enjoy your pain.
Ooh.
Which is, we're going to show you after lunch how to enjoy the other person's pain.
Ooh, that sounds...
It's one of the most loving things you can do, you see. If you, as I will define it, obviously I don't mean in a sadistic way. Yes.
So I have a couple I'm working on. One of them is because I have a need for predictability.
I have a need for predictability?
Schedule.
Okay.
And the other one would be because I have a need for privacy.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
My need is for comradeship and acknowledgement of my comradeship.
I have a need to memorialize the life of your father, and in doing so, honor the life of your entire family.
I have a need to honor this life, yes.
I have a need to have communication with other people that is open and supportive of life.
Need for supporting of life, openness. Okay.
When you do this, I feel hurt because I have a need to be heard and understood.
Yes, very important need, that need for understanding, to be heard, to be listened to, empathy. There's different ways of expressing it, but it's a critical need, one that we have daily. Daily, yes.
Bottom line, I have a need to love you and to let your love in.
I have a need to love, but don't bring the other person in there.
To let.
I have a need for
to love. And to let love in.
And to let love, yes. See, our needs don't, when we believe that our needs involve another person doing something, we take a very abundant world and make it scarce very quickly. So we don't want to mix up our need and a request. See, we may have a request, a strong request, that a particular person meet our need for love. See, that's a strategy. We may want this particular person, but we don't have a need for that person to love us. That's mixing up the need and the request. We have a need for love. We have a strong preference that this person take the actions to meet that need. But we don't want to mix up the need and the strategy. Okay, let's take one more and then we'll go. We've got to move on. Yes.
Yeah, I'm confused if this is a need or a strategy.
Okay.
I need to feel loved.
Ah, loved is a very important word. I need love. Yes. But now, that word love is so important that we got to get real clear what we mean about it when we use it as a giraffe. See, watch what happens when a giraffe and a jackal get together on this love. See, watch this jackal ask a very dangerous question. But notice that the giraffe is too smart ever to answer this question. Watch. Do you love me? Jackal, before I can answer your question honestly, I need to get some important things clear. Are you using the word love as a feeling? Well, of course. Okay, well, I needed to get that clear. So you mean, am I feeling certain warm, cuddly, tender feelings toward you? Yes. Okay, I needed to get this clear. Because see, we giraffes do not use the word love as a feeling. It's much too important to us to get it confused with a feeling. It's a need for us. But since you use it as a feeling, okay, I'm glad to know that. So would you please then, now that I know that, would you ask the question again? Do you love me? When? When? Well, I want to be honest. I can see how important this is to you, but how can I be honest with you about what I feel toward you without reference to a specific moment? Feelings change every few seconds. Life is changing. Feelings are part of life. So I'd have to know a specific time and place to ever answer your question of how I feel. What about right now? No. But try me again in a few moments. So you see, to a giraffe, love is a need, and it's a need for which we must be very clear about what requests do we have of other people to meet that need. Now, watch what happens with reference to that if we're in a love relationship with a jackal. I want you to love me. Oh, so you have a need for love, jackal, and you're giving me the honor of wanting me to meet that need. Yes. I really see how important the need of love is, so I want to be clear what you would like from me to meet your need. Could you tell me what you are requesting of me to meet your need? Now, the poor jackals, they don't live in the moment, you see. And to make a clear request, you have to live now. You have to be clear what you want. So watch how the jackal handles this. So could you tell me what you want me to do to meet your need for love? Oh, you know. No, I'm not sure I do. I really see how important this need is for you, so can you tell me specifically what you would like me to do to meet your need for love? Well, it's hard to say in so many words. If it's hard for you to say, Jackal, can you see how hard it will be for me to do? I never thought of that. So what would you like me to do to meet your need for love? It's embarrassing to get clear. Yes, it is, because much of our oppression in close relationships comes from saying to people, I want you to respect me, I want you to love me, I want you to understand me, without our being real clear what we want when we say that. So what are you wanting, Jackal, when you say you want me to love you? I want you to guess what I want before I even know what it is. And I want you always to be willing to do it. Thank you for defining it that way, Jackal. Would you please find someone else to meet your need for love? Most jackals that carry that definition of love around with them find out how impossible it is to meet on about their fifth divorce. You see, they keep thinking that they're going to find the right person to love them, not realizing the problem is how they're defining love and what they want from other people to meet the need for love, to see that it's impossible to meet that need. Which brings us to the next step in the process, how to make clear requests after we have expressed our unmet need. And a clear request defined in giraffe is, first, it's a positive action. We say what we do want, not what we don't want. So a woman gave me a very good example of what happens when you say what you don't want. In a workshop, she said, you've really helped me understand what happened recently, Marshall. I said to my husband, I don't want you spending so much time at work. And then I got furious with him when he signed up for a golf tournament. A teacher gave me a similar example. She said, just yesterday, Marshall, I said to this young boy, please, I don't want you tapping on your book while I'm talking. So he started to tap on his desk. Saying what we don't want doesn't make clear what we do want. But worse than that, if we frame our objectives in getting rid of something, it leads to violence very often. It makes violence seem attractive when we try to get rid of something. For example, I was working with some teachers in a school in Rockford, Illinois. Their observable behavior they wanted to work on is, on the average, every 3 months, 38 broken windows in the school. So we got down to the request. I said, what do you want different from the students? It's obvious. We don't want them breaking windows. So you're saying you don't want the children breaking windows? Yes. What should we do? Kill them. Research has demonstrated dead children break no windows. Almost any time we think of what we want to get rid of, it makes violence look attractive. And as stupid as that example was I just gave you, look in the newspaper on any given day and see how many world leaders are saying we're going to teach them not to, we're going to get them to stop. And they think violence is going to... See, it always makes violence seem attractive to... It's only, as I said earlier, when we get two questions clear. What do we want people to do? And what do we want their reasons to be for doing it? Then I think we'll see violence never works. Okay, so we want to say what we want to say in the positive. What do we want the other person to do? What do we want them to start doing differently? And second, that it needs to be clear action language. See, we can't do what this one wife did with her husband who came to a workshop with him. She said, I want you to listen to me when I talk. He said, I do listen. No, you don't. Yes, I do. No, you don't. They told me they'd had this same conversation for 11 years. The problem is with the word listen. See, what does that... We can use the word listen as a need. I have a need to be listened to. But when we move to request, we need to speak action language. What specific action do we want this person to take? We can't use the verb to be. I want you to be more friendly. Not doable. We can't use feeling language. I want you to feel confidence in yourself. That's not doable. So we need to be able to make very concrete requests. Try it out with what is under D there. See, in relation to what the other person did and your feelings and needs in relation to the action, imagine you're talking directly to the person and express a request using this form. I would like you to. What do you want the person to do to meet your needs?
I want you to obey my instructions.
Let's use the word, I want you to do what I told you to do. I want you to do what I told you to do. And if you were a giraffe, you would give that to the person with a little card that said, but please do as I requested, only if you can do so with the joy of a little child feeding a hungry duck. Please do not do as I request if there is any fear of punishment motivating you. Please do not do as I request out of a hope for reward or that I will like you if you do. Please do not do as I request out of guilt, shame, duty, obligation. Life is too short to do anything for anybody out of that. So what I'm getting at is when we do make a request, we want it to be sure that the person trusts it's a request and not a demand. So we'll come back to that. But let's just work on the clarity of the request to begin with. Yes. So what is your request?
I would like you to do what was agreed upon.
Okay.
Give me the space to complete my thoughts.
Oh! Too vague. Give me the space.
Let me complete my thoughts.
Let me is not doable. Let me show you what I mean. A woman said to her husband, came to a workshop, I want you to give me the freedom to be myself. He says, I do. No, you don't. I said, hold it. Give me the freedom is not doable. Let me? No, that's not doable. Allow me? It's not doable. What do you want from him when you say, give you the freedom to be yourself? It's embarrassing, yes? Say it. Oh, it's embarrassing. Say it out loud. What do you want when you say all of that? I want him to smile and say, it's okay no matter what I do. Okay, now you're honest. You see, so what do you want?
I want to express myself.
Yes, you can do that. Nobody can stop you from expressing yourself.
So I'm getting interrupted.
You want the other person to wait until you finish speaking?
Yes.
Before starting?
Yes.
Okay, that's the doable action. So how do we know? You can only tell whether it's a request or a demand by how I treat you if you don't do it. That's what tells people whether we are making requests or demands. What is their memory of how we act when we don't get what we want? If people have in their memory any punishment on our part in the past when they don't do what we want, any blame, it will now be hard for them to trust that we are making a request and not a demand. It will take the joy out of giving to us. So let's follow that example a little bit more for me to show you what I mean. So I say to you, I'm really lonely this evening and would have a need for some company. Would you be willing to spend the evening with me? And you say, Marshall, I'm really preoccupied with some things at work and would really need some space to myself this evening. Could you find someone else to be with you this evening? And here's my reaction. Two days later, you, what's the matter? Nothing. You, come on, what's the matter? You knew how lonely I was. If you love me. Now, was it a request or a demand? See, so we can't tell from how nicely it's asked. We need to see how the person treats us when we don't do what they want. That's when we trust that they make requests or not demands. So we are going to pay for every time in the past when we used any coercive means to get what we wanted. So now at least we don't want to pay for that anymore. We want to be sure that whenever we make a request, it is a request. Now that doesn't mean the other person will trust it, even if it is, because unfortunately there's been so much coercion in our world that even if we are making a sincere request, the other person might hear a demand. I was working in one school system with a group of students that the school district labeled as socially and emotionally maladjusted. Now, from what you've learned today, was that a jackal school system or a giraffe school system? Yes.
It sounds like in your example that the person was really disappointed or really let down.
Not let down, that's a diagnosis.
Okay.
They're really disappointed.
Disappointed.
Really hurt.
Okay. So how could they have expressed that without being a demand, but not suppressing the fact that they're really disappointed?
They could say, so you have a lot to do right now, and it would really meet your need to be by yourself. Yeah. And the kind of mood I'm in right now, I really trust that you would meet it better than anybody else I know. Is there some way that we could find to get your work done and still meet my need for connection tonight? That's what we call dogging for our needs. Now that shows respect for the other person's needs. I'm not trying to use any guilt or manipulation, right? I'm just trying now to find a way to get everybody's needs met. Okay?
So then if the person can't find replacement?
If the person cannot think of somebody to replace them, it will not be a problem. It will only be a problem if I put on these ears and receive in what they said a rejection. You see, if I hear a rejection, that's the problem.
It's not okay to say I'm disappointed?
You can say I'm disappointed as long as you don't say you disappoint me.
Okay.
And as long as you don't stop after saying I'm disappointed. See, I'm disappointed. That's just another way of saying you disappointed me. I'm disappointed. We always have to end a feeling. At the very end of it is going to be a request. See, so just, we don't just say I'm disappointed. We'd have to say, we have to take responsibility for asking for what we want. Given the other person has this other need, okay, what do you want then from them? Well, the jackal doesn't like that game. They don't like to have to be responsible for what they want. They'd rather say, well, if they love me, you see, if they were any kind of friend, I think it's only fair that they want to control by guilt, shame. So the school district asked me to work with these students that were labeled socially and emotionally maladjusted. Poor school system doesn't realize that labels lead to self-fulfilling prophecies. When you label people that way, they're going to behave that way. Come on, be honest. If you are labeled socially and emotionally maladjusted, you're one of those students, doesn't that give you permission to have fun in school? Labels lead to self-fulfilling prophecy. So I knew it was going to be a rough day just by that label. So when I walk into the classroom, it already starts. Half of the students are hanging out the window, screaming obscenities at their friends in a courtyard down below. So I made a request. Excuse me, I would like you all to come on over and sit down, please. I'd like to tell you who I am, what I'd like to do today. Half the students come over. I wasn't sure the other half had even heard me, so I repeated it. Would you all please come over? Now, everybody comes over, with the exception of two young men. Just my luck, the two that didn't come over, the biggest ones in the classroom. And again, I wasn't too sure they'd heard me, and I was praying it might just be a problem with acoustics, so I said, would one of you two gentlemen tell me, please, what you heard me say? Yeah, you said we had to come over and sit down. You see the problem? I make a request, he hears a demand. So I said, sir, I have learned to always use sir with people who have biceps like he did. Especially with a tattoo on top of the bicep. I said, sir, could you tell me how I could have let you know what I was requesting so it wouldn't sound like I was telling you what you had to do? He said, huh? See, that's a radical paradigm shift for somebody who's been educated under domination conditions, domination structures, where authorities claim to know what's right, you have to do it or else, you see? So it's a radical paradigm shift in giraffe schools where people don't make demands. They just make requests. So I realize this is not going to be easy with this gentleman. He's probably carrying with him a lot of traces of being punished when he doesn't do what other people want or blamed. I'm not expecting him to give it up right like that. So I said, sir, how could I let you know that I was requesting something of you without it sounding like I was bossing you around? I don't know. I said, just what's happening between you and me right now is much that I wanted to talk about today. Because I was wanting to look at a way we could interact where nobody bosses others around. And I didn't expect life to be so easy. That was all he needed. He trusted at that point that I wasn't trying to tell him what to do. And he came over and we had a very cooperative day. But as long as people hear our request as demands, they have only two choices, submission or rebellion. And neither of us are going to connect us with people in a way that's good for anybody. So the main thing that's the difference is not how nicely we say it, but how we treat people when they don't do what we want. Now, let's hear a few of these so we can see what kind of reactions you might get back. If you openly express your heart, you try to your best not to criticize, not to demand, what do you get back?
She gets excited and defends herself.
Well, I need to hear the specific statement, because I don't know what you mean by defends herself. What does she say? Got to be specific. For the next exercise, we need to know specifically what the person says or does. See, that's your diagnosis, that she's defensive. What does she say?
Sometimes things happen and I'm not ready to leave when we agree.
Well, sometimes things happen and I'm not ready to leave when I agree. Okay, that's what the person says.
I can't do that because I have a hard time connecting with people as partners.
I can't do that because I have a hard time connecting to people as partners.
This is their response back.
Yes, what did your person respond back?
He says, nothing I do is ever good enough.
Nothing I do is ever good enough.
Okay, here. I guess I should go through the whole thing. She says she doesn't like the way I wash dishes or make the bed.
Yes.
I feel angry and resentful.
Yes.
I feel, as I expressed, because I need to be accepted for my willingness and ability to do a job the way I do it.
Yes.
I would like you to acknowledge my work positively.
Even if I don't feel like it? How would you like me to respond positively when an idiot could do a better job making a bed than you do?
Okay. That's the last thing. She would say that she can't because I never do it the way it should be done.
Yeah, so the problem there is with the present request. What do you want from this person? I think what you want is this. I'd like at least some gratitude expressed for my willingness to do what I did. And if I could get at least the gratitude for that first, I could better hear how you would like me to do it differently. Would that be closer?
It'd be closer, but I'd still like her to accept the way that I do it.
What does accept mean? Now we got to translate accept into a doable request. What if this person has a sense of aesthetics? You see, I can already tell what the problem is in your relationship. I've already made a diagnosis. You want to hear my diagnosis?
Okay.
You are a slob and she's a neat. See, there's these two kinds of people in the world, slobs and neats. And for some reason or other, they always live together. It doesn't make sense to me. You see, there's so much of this goes on every day about how to keep the wash the dishes, how to make the bed. Now, I'll give away which one I am. I once cleaned the house immaculately. And my partner came home and said, I thought you were going to clean. true story. So you know what I am, right? I wrote her a song that night that goes, if you wonder about the cause of my domestic distress, it's that my partner is antiseptic and I'm a total mess. Last night at 2 a.m., I had to go to the head. In the time it took me, she made the bed. So there are these slobs and meats, and they always get together. I have a plan for world peace. Put the slobs in one hemisphere, the meats in another.
So how does that get back to needs? And now that you've diagnosed
it, it has to do probably with this. And you have to say to the meat, I'd like you to agree that there can be different ways of doing things. Is that what you want?
My solution was that I just don't do it anymore.
Well, a typical slob solution. Yeah. I could have guessed that. Yeah.
It worked.
I would really like some acknowledgement. First, I'd like some expression of gratitude for what I did. I'm not saying you have to like it, but at least I'd like to hear some gratitude, if it's sincere, that at least that I was trying. Second, I'd like you to agree that there can be different ways of defining what is an adequate way to make a bed. Then, if after you agree to that, if you could say what your preference would be without using words that imply that it's right, your way, that would be a lot easier on me. Something like that.
Where is it? You sound like you're doing something out of a book.
You sound like you're doing something out of a book. Talk like a real person. Don't use any of this psychology crap on me. Something like that. Yes. Especially they're going to say that when you're a baby giraffe, you know, because you're trying a new way and it's going to take a while and it's going to go slowly. And when I was first learning this, I was having a conflict with my oldest son and I was sounding like it was coming out of a book. I was having to stop and think everything I said. And the poor guy, he had his friends waiting for him, and he said, Daddy, it's taken you so long to talk. I said, let me tell you what I can say quickly. Do it my way or I'll kick your ass. He said, take your time, Dad. Those who know me in my old jackal days are very patient with my sounding like I'm coming out of a book.
And that's where we're going to leave Marshall Rosenberg for this week. If you'd like to hear how that concludes, you should tune in again next week. This and all previous episodes of Unwelcome Guests are available for download from our MP3 archive at unwelcomeguests.net/archive. If you'd like to give feedback about this episode, you can do so. There's a discussion tab for this show's webpage. The theme music is by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Thank you for listening. I hope you're as encouraged as I am by Marshall Rosenberg's faith that if we each one of us follow our hearts, everybody's real needs will get met. Brave man.